as free as Sarah, yet in the wilderness as Hagar. And the woman fled into the wilderness. Revelation 12, verse 6a. When Hagar, the maidservant of Sarah, was painfully reminded of the fact that the child of Abraham, which she carried under her heart, could not become a mighty cedar under which she herself could shelter from the heat of her bonded life, she fled. By that flight, she took the risk that the young little plant of the still unborn child would be nipped in the bud and perish in the desert. Her flight from the tents of Abraham was a willful withdrawing of Abraham's child from his legal status. This was the result of her refusal to be humiliated herself. Either dominion or death. She wanted the wealth of Abraham or, if need be, the poverty of the desert. All or nothing. That willfulness was sin. The angel of the Lord clearly revealed that to her. The angel of the Lord, according to Dr. G. C. Alders, was a special manifestation of the divine being. The Christian exegesis has particularly connected this manifestation of God, likely with good reason, to the second person of the Holy Trinity. But the last Bible book reveals a counter-image to what was revealed in the first Bible book. In Genesis, we saw Hagar ready to extinguish Ishmael's lamp, even before it could flare up brightly. And shortly after that, she had to return to the tent where Isaac was later born. But in the counter-image in Revelation 12, we see the woman who had brought a male child into the church. This church appeared to be, in particular, the church of the New Testament. For the woman already had the ascension of Christ behind her, Revelation 12, verse 5, and seems to have experienced the blessing of Pentecost, Revelation 12, verse 14. Now it is known that the church in the days of Christ's ascension and Pentecost, exactly in her transition from the Old to the New Testament, was honored by Paul in a remarkable allegory by the name of Sarah. In the letter to the Galatians, Paul made a contrast between the church of the Old and the New Testament. He displayed the first as Hagar, for Hagar was a bondservant, still bound to servitude, whose children would remain in bondage. Those children would inherit no inheritance with the son of the free, with Isaac. Paul used the name of Hagar to identify the church of the Old Covenant, for she too was still in bondage. She also was still a stranger to that precious freedom which Christ would gain for her, a liberty also in regard to men. But over against her, Paul placed the church of the New Testament, dressed with the emblems of the free Sarah. That church is free. She controls her legal possessions and her legal glory, neither of which can be taken away from her. She has been freed from that yoke which none of her fathers had been able to bear. All her children are now free in Christ. But in all of this, there is something quite remarkable. When you put Paul's exegesis beside Revelation 12 verse 6a, while keeping in mind this history of Genesis, the church seemed to share the servitude with Hagar exactly at that time in which she received Sarah's rights. The woman of Revelation 12 has the right to Sarah's full inheritance, and so do her children. But she, who had that right to freedom and the inheritance of Sarah, turned into the desert, where she could only live by the intervention of a miracle. If that miracle had not come, she would have languished from thirst, just as Hagar experienced with her newborn son. This contrast is striking. The real Hagar was not satisfied with only a part. Within the framework of Abraham's tent, she coveted everything or preferred to receive nothing. But the church of the new covenant, which is Sarah, knows that in Christ she is entitled to everything. Yet, believing her own rights, she distanced herself for a time from the actual enjoyment of the possession to which she was lawfully entitled, according to the laws of inheritance. Oh no, she did not give up the loss of inheritance. That would have been atrocious unbelief, an act of Esau. But she did abolish these possessions for a time in abstinence of the practical enjoyment of them, although they legally belonged to her. Thus she fled into the desert at an hour when the father said, "Be free," just like Sarah. Today, all those who believe according to the New Testament are still in this situation. They are glorified by faith in and with Christ, their head. But the practical enjoyment of that glory is still to come. And thus they will not apply the saying, all or nothing, in their own way, which is a self-willed way. In due time, they will in God's way take possession of what He has promised them. They know that with God the words, all or nothing, are indeed true and faithful. One will either be inside or outside the covenant, and will be considered a friend or an enemy on the day of judgment. But those who have everything, according to the justice of God, and in hope, know the distinction between possessing according to justice and the actual enjoyment of that possession. They know that what is put away for them in heaven will remain their legal property, even when they do not yet see it here on earth. All or nothing. That proverb was revealed to us and should be considered as often as the question arises about what God has written in His books. But it is folly to include this proverb in a series of conclusions and experiences which people record in their books when they see us by their eyes of flesh ascending and descending among them. The natural man does not discern the things which are of the Spirit of God. He does not discern that the church, which has fled into the desert, possesses and practices the rites which apply to Sarah in the desert of Hagar's exile. Thus we turn our thoughts away from what people think of us, and even from what we observe ourselves in our own life according to the flesh, and enter with Sarah into the hard desert of Hagar. We allow ourselves to be scorched by the burning sun, and bear the persecution of the world, and tolerate the reproach which is coming upon us because of Christ, and hope in all things for the salvation of the Lord. Christ will take Sarah with all her children into glory. He will do so by the hand that reaches out to an imperishable crown, to give into our possession what already rightfully belongs to us. That is the reality of the ascension of Christ. The head glorifies the members in the desert. Christ is outside the danger zone, while the Christians are inside of it. There still remains a rest for the people of God. We live in the dispensation of pledges. The faithfulness of Him who gave or took them applies to faith, and strengthens us in the carrying of our cross. The ends of ages have come upon us since the day of Christ's ascension, but they are also the ends of the ages. Those who are heirs rejoice only in faith, and that faith is their only way of orientation. Only in faith do we see that they have a place in the desert, prepared for her by God. The angel of the Lord does not have to indicate that place with its refreshing fountains after everything else has come to pass. For before the woman of Revelation 12 withdrew into the desert, she had already received from there, by the infallible word, a positive assurance of its preparation by God and its continuing flowing fountains.